Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on a big step!
Oh,
brother! Lead Toledo artist. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast at HarvardProcessing.com. I am Jason Mann, and with me is my partner in crime, Rich Craich. Rich, great to be back with you.
Absolutely.
And we are going to talk about it's sort of a topic that's in the news a little bit with Kobe Bryant having officially announced his retirement in his 20th season. We're going to look back at some of the other all-time greats, all-time franchise players, look at sort of how they went out. Some of them went out with these farewell tours. Some of them went out just having announced it, but being a little more low-key. Some of them didn't bother to announce until after they were done. So we're just kind of looking at some of the other legends of basketball history and kind of comparing how those receptions were to how Kobe is being received this year.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing in sports right now because for a lot of people, and at least I've always sort of thought that is in recent, because I'm a big baseball fan, so of course, a lot of the stuff going on with Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera, of them retiring over the past, you know, 5 years or whatever, it's been a lot of this. Chipper Jones is another one, too, that I remember got, like, every place he went, everybody was doing all this sort of stuff, and people kind of assume that it's sort of this brand new thing in sports, and I think it's been ramped up a little bit more, the, like, okay, retiring legends coming to our hometown, so here's all this stuff, but it's not completely new. It's not like as of 5 years ago this started. There's examples of it in history. It might be a little more ramped up now, but a guy like Kobe is one where, like, there were some people, and I'm sure there's going to be in the next, you know, decade or whatever, there's gonna be people that are like, yeah, that guy's like just kind of okay, you know what I mean, like he doesn't deserve this, but a guy of Kobe's stature, I'm okay with that. It seems like the NBA does it only when it's like guys of ridiculously worthy stature, whereas baseball sometimes can get a little tricky with that, but we'll talk about it when we do.
Yeah,
so.
Well, it, you know, that kind of speaks to the difference in the NBA to baseball as well, because like baseball, even the most important players like have like a limited, you know, serve a limited role.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, like Mariano Rivera is the greatest closer of all time, but it's like, well, I, you know,
yeah, he pitches in the ninth inning, and
right, yeah, I mean, like, he's the best failed starter of all time. Like, that's really cool.
Sure,
like,
yeah, that's cool. And whereas in basketball, the true franchise players really have, you know, a huge impact in all aspects
right.
of the game.
Like Kobe is a transcendent, like Kareem is a transcendent right. guy. Like guys we're going to talk about here are like transcendent sort of yeah. guys where, and like I got it with Jeter was one that I got it as well.
Yeah.
I think from maybe not from a, you know, his baseball skills, you know, arguable. I mean, he's obviously a very all-time great player or whatever. Is he an all-time like legendary top, you know, whatever, you can argue that or whatever, yeah. but still with the glamour of being in New York, the championships and all that sort of stuff, you get it. And there are a few of these guys we'll talk about here in a little bit, but yeah, I think it is a little bit easier with basketball to just sort of say that is the guy, you know what I mean? Like Kobe Bryant is in all-time, like a legendary all-time great. And you know, at the moment that they're retiring too.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool too. It doesn't really take much to figure it out that, you know,
yeah, and that's
this guy's special.
That's kind of a fame versus value thing. And you know, and with Kobe, there's definitely a lot of both.
Well, The Economist told me that Kobe Bryant wasn't very good at
basketball.
Well, so
yeah. I mean, I guess The Economist was a little bit, yeah, I feel like the headline was
like, Kobe Bryant, really not that good at basketball. Like, the headline's like, he's really good, but is he like the best ever?
Yeah,
like,
it's like, a little, I mean, I feel like we basically agree on Kobe as like, he's probably in like the, he's somewhere like in the 10 to 20 range, probably, of all-time great players.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not like, of course, you know, people know me as the prototypical Kobe hater or whatever, but no, it's inarguable that he's, you know, top 20, top 25 all time.
Yeah. To make that probably not top 10 for me, but I mean,
yeah, I don't know if he'd be my top 10.
If you want to throw
in, I'm going to get a lot of people very upset.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to make that argument, I'm not going to say like, it's ridiculous.
It's not out of the world. Yeah. If you're going to say the best of all time, you're probably out of your world.
Yeah,
but
I know, but yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we talked earlier in previous shows, you know, one of our season preview type show where we kind of talked about the idea of like Kobe, like wanting to have a purpose for Kobe. Like that was kind of, you know, what we were sort of hoping for as basketball fans, for him to kind of go out with a purpose. And now that he's actually officially announced his retirement and then he's leaving, you know, to acclaim from every crowd that he goes to, it's, you know, it's sort of the last time you get to see Kobe versus this team or in this city or in this situation or whatever. I think it does add a little bit, you know, it does sort of, as a fan of basketball but not specifically a fan of the Lakers or Kobe, it still adds a little bit more satisfaction of like, oh, okay, now I feel like I at least need to watch this from a point of view of like, this is the last time I'm going to be able to watch, you know, one of the most important players in NBA history. And even though, you know, performance-wise, it's really bad, I mean, it's really, really, really bad.
We're going to go through some guys here who actually, I was actually surprised at the number of guys who, it is not all that awful their last year, but... yeah, Kobe's kind of embarrassingly awful right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think he had a good game, so he kind of kicked that shooting percentage up a little bit, but it was under 30%, just, you know.
The threes, what is he doing?
Yeah, it's weird, and it's sort of like, you know, it's an odd dynamic of, it's 306 shooting percentage, 219 from three-point percentage. This is, this will be... released a little bit after we've done this podcast, so obviously
yeah,
that,
so
that'll be updated a little bit, but yeah, whatever. I do not think he's going to go on such a tear that the point
so
is
either,
going
yeah.
to be there. So it, you know, we've talked about this before as well, as like, okay, you know, we are very near the end of Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, Dirk Nowitzki, Paul Pierce, you know, all these legends,
Vince Carter,
all these guys who, you know, started around the same time, you know, within a year or two of each other. And, you know, have had these like crazy long careers that are, you know, nearly unprecedented in NBA history. I mean, only, you know, a handful of players before this generation have had guys who have lasted 18, 19, 20 years. And now, you know, we've got a bunch of these guys together and they're all, you know, probably going to go out within a year or two or three of each other. It's going to be interesting to see how Kobe going out versus, you know, Garnett goes out, Duncan, Dirk, you know, whether these guys go out with like a lot of acclaim, whether people are going to know ahead of time, or whether they're just going to, or whether they're just going to, you know, it's going to be it. I mean, it's kind of gone back and forth with all the legends in NBA history. We're going to, you know, talk about some of them. But
which, before we get to those, which do you prefer from a standpoint, or is it different based off the player?
You know, I like it ahead of time. I kind of like the pageantry. I kind of like the, you know, the ability to celebrate their career and ability to kind of have the, you know, the story behind it of this being kind of the farewell tour. Even though Kobe is like, you know, they've requested like no gifts and, you know, they've tried to like tone down some aspects of that. But I mean, I think the only real reason to announce this is to at least have, you know, to have the goodbye in a, to a certain degree, or take the pressure off the organization or whatever, just to kind of, you know, admit, okay, this is actually it. I kind of prefer it being open, although I understand players who don't want that to you know, to be a distraction or to be a thing. So, I mean, I think either one is fine. But as a fan, I prefer to kind of know and to be able to celebrate in the moment.
I used to be the opposite. I used to think, no, because I hated the pageantry and that sort of stuff and the pregame gifts and all that sort of stuff. But sort of as I've gotten older, and I think I've gotten to the point now where a lot of the guys that are retiring, like, I think it's a very personal thing where now a lot of those guys, like half the names you mentioned before, you know, guys like Vince Carter and Dirk specifically are like two of my all time favorites. And I have such like fond memories of them that I would almost, you know, knowing that it's going to be Dirk's final game in Chicago or whatever, will make it so, and I try to go no matter what, but that would be like, you know, no matter what, I have to go and see that. You know what I mean? And like, I have to watch all these games and I got to appreciate it a little bit more. Whereas, you know, if he didn't, I might kind of take it for granted and not really maybe watch as much, not go if he's in town and that sort of stuff. And that's, you know, as I've gotten older, I've sort of appreciated the idea that, hey, you know, it's pretty cool to have that sort of closure Whereas, you know, if he just out of nowhere retired after last year or whatever, and I was like, oh, no, I didn't get to see that. I'd almost feel kind of, I don't know, I'd feel like let down, or like I didn't get to, you know, have my closure with that, or, you know, there's different things like that. So I'm on board with now knowing. And I think sometimes the gifts and that sort of stuff can get a little too, you know, over the top or whatever. But it doesn't really bother me like it maybe used to. For whatever reason, it did bother me, but I'm okay with it now. And yeah, you know, we'll talk about one of these guys here, but I was watching video of one of the guys, you know, the last game or whatever, and you have no idea, and he doesn't really, I don't know if he knows, and the crowd kind of knows, but does, and it's just like kind of awkward and weird, and it's like, you know what, I think it would just be good if everybody knew, hey, this is it for that guy. But yeah, I'm on board with knowing ahead of time as well now.
Yeah, and I think it makes a difference whether this player is like on the franchise, you know, he's been on that team for his entire career, most of his career, at least, is like best known for that franchise. You know, that kind of way of saying goodbye in front of like the fans that are, you know, kind of your main fans. I think that makes a difference versus, you know, a guy like Pierce or Carter are unlikely to have that kind of send off to their
career. Yeah, like Memphis isn't going to give like where the hell is Vince Carter?
He's Memphis
though, right? Yeah. And that's like I don't even remember where he's at.
Unless Pierce somehow went back to Boston for a spell, right. Carter, I guess.
Well, that's what's cool about the KG thing. Yeah. In a lot of ways.
Exactly. He's back in Minnesota, and we talked about, you know, him kind of having that purpose as like that mentor and sort of embracing that and sort of. He's by far the most important player in their franchise history. So have him back. That's a meaning for a franchise is not, you know, that's.
Yeah. And from a team standpoint, too, it's you mentioned from a roster building standpoint, it's good to know, OK, you know, just scratch him off the books for next year. You know, now we can build with, you know, you kind of have closure on that end. But also there's also, you know, it's kind of in some way sort of exploitative, but now that you know that they're retiring, you can do a lot more that season. You know, you can have the bobblehead day, the t-shirt, you know, you can market it a little bit more, which, you know, in one respect is kind of like shady and icky or whatever, but in some it's kind of cool. Like Paul Konerko for the White Sox, you know, I'm a big, you know, Chicago White Sox fan or whatever, you know, he retired I think 2 years ago at this point, and like every weekend there was something going on that was Paul Konerko related. You know, you get a bobblehead one day, you get this, and it gave a reason to go to the stadium even with the team is no good. Like and that I think is always kind of cool with NBA teams too, where you're like, you know what, hey, this team's no good, but you know, it's my last time seeing this guy, or it's my last time seeing Kobe Bryant. So in that respect, it's kind of cool, or you can get giveaways and that stuff. So yeah, I'm all on board with it.
Yeah, and I'm sure Lakers fans feel that way. I mean, you know, having I'm sure that there's value in having the ability to kind of say goodbye to Kobe and know that you're saying goodbye to Kobe, and being able to sort of enjoy it, even if maybe, you know, the aesthetics of how he's playing.
You know, if you have to put acid in your eyes when you're right, when you leave the game. But other than that, it's
I think there's at least like now, you know, you can get something out of like the crowd reactions on the road when, you know, they're getting excited for him to be there or chant MVP or whatever. You know, he is one of these very, very few like transcendent, like across the league type stars who really like.
Oh, no, in any city he goes, there's a huge pocket of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I mean, like,
guaranteed. There's not one city here that doesn't have, you know, hundreds of thousands of Kobe Bryant fans.
Sure, so. I mean, yeah, I there are, and the list of players who really make a difference on that level is very small. So,
right.
You even the other guys we talked about, you know, KG, Dirk, and Duncan. You know, as great as they are, and as important as they are to the history of the game, they don't really have that same sort of appeal for the most part. So,
right.
Should we get into the players we're going to talk about?
Let's do it.
All right, we're going to start with Michael Jordan. You might have heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, famous, spent most of his career with the Chicago Bulls, but after retiring after having won 6 championships, 2 three-peats, spent a couple years out of the league, then got involved in the ownership of the Washington Wizards and decided, hey, you know what? I'll come back. And played for a couple more seasons. And I don't know, this is sort of considered like a huge like historical mistake, or like a, I don't know about like a ruining of a legacy, but definitely like a detraction of his legacy. He didn't really, I mean, he didn't play that bad. I mean,
he wasn't. Yeah. And that's what's always kind of funny about those is in, you know, and at the time I remember that being the big talking point. Oh my God, what is Jordan doing? Oh my God, it's so embarrassing. Oh my God, he can't do anything he used to do or whatever. But then when you look down to it, I mean, yeah, the teams didn't win. And maybe that's the biggest thing of his legacy is like that everybody had that mystique that anytime Jordan steps on the floor, his team is automatically, you know, in title contention or going to win a title. And that, you know, for many, many years, that was the case. But, you know, with the Wizards, it wasn't that. But on the court, he wasn't. I mean, he was pretty damn good. I mean, he had lost most of the athleticism, but he could still shoot. I remember he had that little, like, drop step fadeaway thing that he would just hit on everybody. And it's like, he, you know, he got in the gym and then probably said, okay, look, I can't do what I did at all. But, you know, he wasn't that much different than, like, what the Jordan was on the last, you know, Bulls team. I mean, that was a Jordan that was radically different than the Jordan that was on the 91 Bulls. You know what I mean? Sure. Like, if you watch those two Jordans, they're not that, you know, they're not similar at all. And I think the final, you know, three-peat Jordan, at least the last year, 98 Jordan, is not a whole lot different than the one you got with the Wizards. He was just a little bit older, a little bit more, you know, out of shape. But, yeah, like, his final season was actually pretty good. His first one back, he had a decent amount of struggles, but this one, his final one, I mean, he didn't go out like a whimper. I mean, he played all 82 games, started 67 of them. He had a 20 points per game, which was the career low, but he was second on the team of the Wizards. It was not a great Wizards team at that time. It was like Jerry Stackhouse was on there and a few other guys. But yeah, no, second on the team with 20 points per game, 44.5% from the field, which is not bad at all, considering, you know, his shots weren't very close to the rim. They were very, you know, kind of mid-range heavy. 6.2 win shares, 0.099 win shares per 48. I mean, not great numbers, but definitely certainly not bad. Like, not unplayable.
Not like, that like would he was embarrassing himself, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's not 6.2 win share is not embarrassing. I mean, that's, it's not like that. And then, you know, his usage was the highest on the team at 28.7. So he was taking up a lot of possessions. But, you know, with that team, it really wasn't. I mean, I suppose Jerry Stackhouse, I think he was second, probably could have used a few more of those possessions. But it wasn't a big deal. And that team wasn't very good anyway. But, yeah, certainly did not embarrass himself at all. I mean, you know, famously sort of, you know, knocked his point per game totals down almost to real bad levels, you know, in terms of like not going to be an all-time great or whatever, but still, when it all said and done, I mean, the guy was great, and it didn't affect his career all that much. I mean, I think we talk about it a little too much as it being an embarrassment. It's really not.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on how you view Jordan when you experience Jordan. Like, if you think of, like, if you kind of came of age like in the early 90s or when like Jordan was like completely dominant, just the Bulls completely dominated the league, and, you know, basically, you know, if Jordan was there, you know, they couldn't lose type of thing. If you have that Jordan in your head, then I think it's like a big fall from that. If you take Jordan's entire career, the first 8 years when, you know, they had a lot of team struggles, even though he had individual brilliance and, you know, they were knocking at the door forever. And, you know, if you kind of take into like Jordan being great, but not necessarily immortal, you know, like in the same way of like the, you know, of Bill Russell, let's say, of the team success on, I mean, then I think this fits more in with just like, okay, well, you know, this is just an aging great, still great, but not quite as great. And, you know, this is keeping more in line with the early part of his career. So I think it kind of depends on when you got into Jordan and when you, you know, when he came of age as an NBA fan. He did start playing on the bench. It was because he started as a sixth man. It was because of you kind of wanted to save himself, but then injuries sort of put him back in the starting lineup. And, you know, and this was really like the only time he was able to actually say goodbye, you know, to fans, or fans were, I guess, more able to say goodbye to him while he was still playing. I mean, the other two retirements, the first came after, you know, his father had been murdered, and it was just, you know, in a press conference over the summer. The second time was after the lockout had ended in early 99. And, you know, it was at an event at the United Center, but it was, you know, it wasn't during a game. There was a strong feeling that, you know, when they won the 98 championship, that was probably going to be it. And that was certainly going to be it for the Bulls team, you know, being together. You know, whether Jordan would continue was, I think, considered unlikely, but was less, you know, certain. But this was a definitive way of saying goodbye. It was announced before, you know, the end of the season. He had a, you know, he was, I think Vince Carter, deferred so that Jordan could take his place as starter in the All-Star game. And Jordan hit what looked like a game-winning shot, although it ended up being negated. Well, the shot would count, but then other things happened that ended up not making it the game winner.
Who was the go to that? I remember there was somebody that like felt really bad.
Kobe like got fouled, and like Kobe was mad that that the refs had called the foul and then he made foul shots and it tied and then it went to overtime. And I forgot who
the guy that fouled Kobe afterwards, but he was like so apologetic and stuff after the game. I just remember that vividly in my mind. Like it was like, this is a farce of a game. Like nobody, like everybody's upset that the game went on and like things, it was just kind of in that respect. You know. Forgot who it was. It was somebody.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. It was some klutzy guy too, and it was like somebody that you're like, yeah, of course that was the guy who did it or whatever. It was like, no, don't foul him. Damn it, like Antoine Walker, someone like that. I forgot who, but it's probably Antoine Walker. But.
We'll just go ahead and blame him. So
yeah,
anyone wants to let us know for at Over and Back NBA on Twitter, you can let us. So yeah, I mean, he had 340-point games that season, including a 43-point game against the Nets that came 4 days after his 40th birthday, which means he's the only player over the age of 40 to have a 40-point game in NBA history. And Jack McCollum,
Jermaine O'Neal, got it. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
All right, but Jermaine is not quite that much of a klutz, but
no, he's not very much of a klutz. But I remember him being very apologetic afterwards.
I mean, imagine basically everyone in that game was like worshipped Jordan as a kid. So, I mean, that must be, you know, that would be an odd feeling. I mean, I get a lot of them are used to playing against him, but still, I mean, you know, it's his last one. It makes a difference. So, wait a minute, no, that doesn't make any sense because O'Neal, he would have been with the Pacers by then, right?
Yeah, he was a Pacer. So, yeah, he fouled Kobe Bryant.
Right. Okay, never mind. So Jack McCollum wrote a piece that's in the SI Vault, Michael Jordan going out in style is what it's called. And the quote there is, when you play the Washington Wizards, you're not playing a mediocre team battling to make the playoffs in the mediocre Eastern Conference. You're playing Michael Jordan on his last go-around, and that means something. So, you know, that sense of purpose, obviously, that, you know, we're kind of feeling with Kobe now. And there is a famous Washington City paper article. I guess it's sort of actually a series of articles written by a bunch of different people. And it's really like a it's a pretty scathing look at sort of like the cynical nature of Jordan being in Washington and sort of like the after hours look and the entourage around him and like him, like sort of like living his youth, like in the clubs and, you know, things like that, just sort of like setting like a Jordan scene as like sort of a pathetic old man. It's really, we'll have to include it in the links if we get a chance, because that's a pretty famous piece and just sort of, it's not all super negative, but there's enough of it that's, you know, pretty strongly negative that's, you know, but it does paint a picture of kind of how he was viewed at the end there, of just sort of like this being a little bit of like a, you know, a sad coda to the end of his career. So the quote from that is, for one hot shooting quarter or one night at a club, you could still pretend that Michael Jordan was Michael Jordan, but it couldn't last. Step back and he was just another Wizards or Bullets short timer with a funny backstory. Rex Chapman or Manute Bol. He was just another businessman watching things go sour with the boss. So, and after this, in fact, he was fired as team president by A. Poland, the owner of the Wizards, which Jordan sort of viewed as a betrayal. But Jordan didn't have necessarily the best record as an executive. He would sort of argue, well, you know, we're kind of rebuilding here. I did some things that enabled us. They were able to sign Gilbert Arenas thanks to some of the cap space he cleared. So, you know, but he did draft Kwame Brown and, you know, not a great run for him, but he sort of felt like, okay, I went here and played and now I should have this position. And then it didn't really work out. But then, you know, he ended up buying the Charlotte Bobcats and the rest is history.
The championships came.
Yes. Yes.
They came swiftly. Yes,
swiftly indeed. So you, you know, obviously one highlight of this final year was the emotional goodbye that he had in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. So of course, that's kind of probably the most famous game of his retirement tour or whatever. Yeah, went to Chicago. They had a famous thing that they announced him. It wasn't like too over the top, but they put in the from North Carolina, you know, similar to the introduction he would get as a member of the Bulls. But, you know, I've got it as the Wizards. Received, I think, like a 4 minute standing ovation or something like that. He had to get a microphone to finally be like, all right, thank you. Like, stop talking. And then, like, I remember watching on TV at the time, and they the Bulls, because they always turn the lights out to do like the intros. They turned the lights out and everybody just booed. And that was the best part, because it was like, now the Bulls players are just getting booed mercifully as they're coming out to their own team, and like it's pretty funny. But yeah, that was sort of one of the funny things. And there's a good article, an ESPN recap actually talking about it, and it said, you know, here's a quote, though Jordan swears this is his last season. So still, it was kind of funny that there's a little bit of like, you know, he says it's his last season, but is he really true? But it, you know, of course it would be. So the Bulls canceled the pregame ceremony they had originally planned because Jordan said he didn't want the traveling farewell tour. He had specifically said, I just want, you know, do whatever you want for me, but yeah, I don't want the full tour. I don't want all this sort of stuff. So, interesting enough, but yeah, it was pretty cool. Jordan quotes in that story, we both had a chance to say goodbye. Let's move on to the rest of the season and move on in life. So Jordan was ready to go to the next level. And then Marcus Fizer, then Chicago Bull Marcus Fizer, had a great quote. He's always going to be Michael Jordan no matter what. In 3 or 4 years, he could be 300 or 400 pounds and he's still going to be Michael Jordan.
You could have Hitler mustache.
Yeah, little did he know, Marcus Fizer know that Michael Jordan would take him up on that 300 pounds.
He could wear extremely baggy jeans, you know. I mean, he could, you know, he could do anything, you know. He's still Michael
Jordan. Which, if you saw Jordan in the 90s, you could kind of understand that he probably would have terrible fashion come.
Wasn't good.
Because, like, in the 90s, like, he wore bad stuff, but it was like,
The 90s.
Yeah, you could tuck your sweater into, like, corduroys. No one will care. Sure. That's great. Yeah. Like, that's really cool. But, yeah, then he, like, never evolved past that. And it's still like, oh, yeah, you're still wearing that, like, the golf hat, huh? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. But, yeah, that's so, yeah, Marcus Fizer there. Yeah. But, yeah, that was probably his most famous, you know, game of his retirement
right.
tour.
Right, and it was, it's worth noting that the Bulls were absolutely terrible for, like, 5 or 6 years after Jordan left. I mean, they were trying to do kind of a 76ers-style rebuild. I mean, all young players. And they kind of rebooted that after a couple years, and then really until like 2005, they were not very good at all. So
can you imagine the internet outrage now if they if a team traded Elton Brand like after his rookie year? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the Bulls literally had a guy, Elton Brand, who had won Rookie of the Year, was scoring, you know, 22 points a game, like a reliable guy, and they traded him for an 18.
Was it after 1 year, like, or 2 years? I thought
it was 2 years. He had 2 years there. I just meant like after being, you know, he was named Rookie of the Year.
Right.
You know, so, obviously came back, had a good season.
Yes.
Yeah, and then like, so 2 years, I mean, he's what, 22, 23 at most at that point, and they trade him. I mean, like, can you imagine the outrage?
And
like,
that trade was for Tyson Chandler, right?
It's Tyson Chandler.
They drafted Eddie
Curry
and they signed
Tyson. They drafted Curry and then traded Brand of the Clippers for Chandler. Yeah. Can you even imagine
who didn't really work out that well in Chicago? Obviously later stages in his career did very well, but Chicago was sort of an up and down situation for him. But so next we'll talk about I don't know, one of the two most famous retirement tours for me, and these are kind of linked together. Julius Erving, who retired in the 1987 season, this is the first one that I was aware of where it was like, okay, you're going to all these different cities, you're getting these gifts from each of the teams, and, you know, and the fans are saying goodbye to you. And, you know, and it's interesting to kind of see how, like, he was viewed at the time. I mean, he's still viewed as, like, a great player, one of the greats of all time, maybe, but not necessarily, like, you know, the best player of, like, the 70s and the 80s, you know? Like,
he doesn't seem transcendent, no. I mean, like, I love him. I think he's great. But, yeah, like, he doesn't quite strike me as a guy that deserves – you know, a lot of pageantry.
Yeah, I think he deserved it fine at the time, but it's just like, now, like the way I feel like he is not viewed as like, he's not like a top 10, he's not viewed as a top 10 greatest player of all time or like that, like that would warrant the stream. So I guess in those terms, I guess maybe it seems overstated in a way.
In terms of his numbers that year, played in 60 games and he started each one of those. He had a career low 16.8 point per game, 4.4 rebounds per game, shot 47.1%, so still not bad. 3.5 win shares, 0.088 win shares per 48, and both those were also career lows. So, I mean, not like an awful, awful showing, but not I mean, it was obvious that this was the worst of the Julius Erving. You know, it's not it was probably time to go at this point. I mean, this wasn't a terrible year, but it looked like he had pretty much checked out, or not checked out, but everything that he had was pretty well gone at this point.
Yeah.
But he was able to kind of rely on still some of the innate skills that he had. But yeah, a lot of the flash and flair was pretty well gone.
Yeah, and the Sixers at this point were a They were sort of a middling playoff team. They ended up losing in the first round to the Bucks. They seem to play the Bucks basically in every year, but they had traded Moses Malone for Jeff Ruland. And, you know, Andrew Toney was basically at the end of his career. Barkley had come in and was obviously taking like a larger share, but they were, you know, the previous season was kind of like the last hurrah for like that, the Moses Malone centered Sixers, you know, began obviously in 83 with the championship and then had, you know, some deep playoff runs, you know, through 86. They lost a 7-game semifinals to the Bucks in 86. So, you know, so they had a strong, you know, they had deep playoff runs through that point. And then, you know, by 87, you know, they were lower tier, and then they would kind of start rebuilding after that, for the most part, around Barkley, which didn't work out. But, you know, at that point, he actually had the third most points of all time, NBA and ABA, behind Kareem and Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, he had, I think he just went over 30,000 points for his career. So, I mean, you think on that scale, it's like the third greatest scorer of all time.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's obviously a great accomplishment. So, and had been the guy who helped popularize the slam. In fact, you know, another thing that sort of illustrates kind of his importance is that in the May 4th, 1987 issue of Sports Illustrated, there were 7 articles on Irving's retirement. some of them were shorter, but I mean, they were all decent length, you know, articles. I mean, they were obviously it was part of like a big center spread type thing. But, you know, Frank Deferd, the very famous Sports Illustrated writer, you know, for a long time, you know, he about Irving's legacy, he wrote, basketball is now a much more artistic game than it was before. Than any game was before because of Julius Irving. The slam before the doctor was essentially an act of power. A stuff is what it was usually called. As great giants jammed the ball through the hoop, Irving transformed the stuff into the dunk and made what had been brutal and a product of size into something beautiful and a measure of creativity. So, and I also talked about like being like, you know, not only one of the greatest players ever, but also like one of the kindest and nicest people to ever deal with, like just amazingly so. And I guess part of the reason why he was sent off in such a with such a hurrah. So, and then McCollum, Jack McCollum, writing for they called it the Doc Across America tour. This of course was well, maybe not of course, because a lot of people probably have no idea what this is, but Hands Across America. Do you know Hands Across America was?
I do, yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, there you go. What? Yeah, Hands Across America.
Pretty much only from like The Simpsons.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. So I remember I almost remember when Hands Across America was something that like was like a big deal and was like talked about. It was like with the 100th anniversary of the Statue of Liberty and had been restored. Yeah. And then like part of that was like a you know, I guess the idea was that everyone was going to hold hands across the entire like United States, like they were gonna, you know, or at least like in, you know, sections of it. So,
did you hold hands?
I don't believe so. No, I don't remember that. Oh. So I got some
way to break the chain.
I got some cool special statue.
Ohio was empty.
I guess so. Ohio was empty. Well, you know, I did get some special Statue of Liberty themed coins from my great grandparents, which I still have. So, that was pretty cool. Anyway, so he talked about, how Doc, like, you know, would always do the right thing on any of these tour stops. Like in Seattle on November 11th, he asked the crowd to pause and remember that it was Veterans Day. In Boston on March 29th, he seamlessly read the inscription on a commemorative plaque after Celtic president Red Auerbach had forgotten to do so. In New Jersey on April 3rd, he came apart with just the right measure of emotion when his old ABA Nets jersey, number 32, was lowered from the Raptors. At Madison Square Garden on April 6th, he greeted Star Trek's Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy with a Vulcan salute. So,
nerd.
Yeah, well, there you go. So,
nerdlinger.
Adept at any situation. So, yeah, there's a pretty good YouTube clip of like some of the highlights from Doc's retirement tour, which is worth checking out if you have never seen it. So, and next is one that I had not really known that much about up until kind of doing some of the research for it. I was aware that he had sort of a fairly famous retirement ceremony, but as far as the actual tour, I hadn't known much about that. It was John Havlicek for the Boston Celtics. He retired in the 1978 season. And this is interesting to me because this is obviously just before Magic and Bird come in the entire nature of the NBA changes. But, the NBA, obviously the early stars, for the most part, at least as far as I'm aware of, none of them really got this kind of send off because, either the league just hadn't had like a tradition and a history yet to sort of warrant it, or, most of the players before Havlicek, they had not necessarily announced their retirement ahead of time. It was a after the season type of decision. So Havlicek did announce his ahead of time. And this is the first, that I'm aware of like kind of this sort of like tour, that Irving had where he'd go to the different cities and they would give him different gifts. And a piece from Curry Kirkpatrick talks about this and says that recently certain critics have rudely knifed through Havlicek's career-long diplomatic immunity to question the propriety of his personally orchestrated final trek through the league, wherein at every stop he has been accorded hosannas and rewarded with enough appliances to fill backstage at the Price is Right. One man went so far as to remark that attracting a full house by the presentation of an oversized soft pretzel trophy, tasty cakes, and a 10-pound salami, a few of the 76ers' chosen gifts, was not exactly a fitting monument to Havlicek. So, I like that.
I'll take that big pretzel, though.
That was nice. Yeah. So,
can you eat the the pretzel trophy? Or is it an edible soft pretzel trophy? Or is it a trophy made out of soft pretzel?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I was assuming it was
like, is there glue on it, or like
I was assuming that it was a trophy shaped in a soft pretzel and not an actual soft pretzel. But
we'll have to get Curtis Harris on the horn to see if he can officially let us know if it was a soft pretzel or a pretzel shaped trophy.
If anyone would know, I would imagine that Curtis would know.
Exactly, that's the type of thing.
So, and Havlicek, he had, I think this was his 15th season. He was in his late 30s. He had set longevity records in the league. So, was still a pretty good performer in his final season. Not what he was in his prime. The Celtics that year were a team that had struggled after having had obviously the great 60s run. And even after Russell retired, they were still, they won two championships and had, a standout run in the 70s that basically ended in Havlicek's last season.
Yeah, the year isn't too bad. He plays in all 82 games, which is quite fitting for Mr. Havlicek. 16.1 points per game, 4 rebounds per game, 4 assists per game. Shoots 44.9%. From the field, not bad at all. 5.1 win shares and a 0.087 win shares per 48. That win shares per 48 was his career low, but the win shares were not his career low. They're actually about as good as he had done, any of his first 5 years of his career. Yeah. So that not bad. I mean, he's definitely not a total slouch at all. And that's kind of one of the fun themes of going through this is I kind of assume more of these legends sometimes would go out with just a really clunker of a year. But it seems like almost every that we're going to detail here, went out with a pretty decent year. They're not like the the baseball player that's hitting under 200 and unplayable or whatever. None of these guys are unplayable. They're all pretty damn good so far, so it's pretty cool. But other than the Boston not really being a great team, a decent last year. I know his final game though, I think he shot something like 29 point, or like shot like 30 times in that game or something like that, some ridiculous number. But other than that, he stayed pretty under control. So
we'll give him a little slack for it being his last game. And
yeah, the team sucks. Yeah, I'm gonna do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah,
so
so I
want enough. I want a goddamn enough titles. I don't need to. Just let me shoot. Just want to go out one time shooting.
There's a good anecdote about from Slam Magazine talking about, is it sort of a profile Havlicek, and that You're talking about the sort of the only interest of that season was farewell tour because they were so bad. He arrived at the game in a tuxedo. I believe the Celtics gave him a camper at halftime. There was like this big like 9-minute ceremony where he's like standing there and they're all kind of like celebrating him. And
he doesn't need the camper. Everybody gave him appliances.
So he bought the appliances for the camper, you know.
Do those work, or do you need special camper appliances? I've never owned a camper.
Maybe they gave him a converter, you know, whatever you might. Okay. I think the appliances work.
I don't know. Yeah, see, I don't know. I don't know if there are special plugs or something.
He shot 33 times in that game, actually.
Okay. All right.
The Celtics were in control throughout. They were playing the Buffalo Braves, which will be important in a moment. And as the clock wound down, the crowd really got into it. Ernie DeGregorio, who was a pretty famous, he had a very short-lived career due to injury, but he was a very popular mid-70s point guard playing for the Buffalo Braves after the injury. He had played a little bit for the Lakers and then a little bit for the Celtics. This was his final game as well. He was in the game for Boston, and he was basically, every time he was passing it to Havlicek, the writer compared it to Hondo had begun his career catching passes from Bob Cousy. Now he was ending it by catching passes from the only player alive who saw the game the way the Cous did. In one 11-second span, Ernie D twice found Havlicek on sneakaways. He scored 9 lightning points to an amazing roar, finishing with 29, a phenomenal farewell. So, an interesting thing about his final game, it was also this will be the final game for the Buffalo Braves as they would move to San Diego after the season was done. And it was the same day that David Thompson scored 73 and George Griffin scored 63 points to, for their duel for the scoring title for
a lot of unabashed chucking on this.
Yes,
on this day.
Exactly. So
Kobe Bryant would be proud of this.
Yeah,
this
there you go.
A day he can.
Exactly. So, so that is definitely an interesting day in NBA history. One thing that to sort of tie in both the Havlicek and Irving tours is that they are obviously them along with Kareem are the most famous or at least the examples that I can find, the most prominent examples of actually like having a tour and having these gifts and having like this, you know, thing. And with Kareem, you know, the interesting thing is like, you know, with Irving and Havlicek, it didn't really necessarily matter because they were not, you know, they weren't really playing for anything. You know, their teams were not good. I mean, I guess Irving's was a playoff team, but, you know, they weren't like a championship contender and Havlicek's nothing. But Kareem was on NBA Finals, the team that ended up going to the finals and had championship aspirations. So he talked a lot about how it was really a big distraction for him to, like, go sort of through those ceremonies and to sort of like be standing like for 10 minutes and to, you know, be kind of cold and, you know, just kind of stand still and not be warming up. And, you know, it sort of affected, he felt like it affected sort of how he played and you know, his season that year was far below his usual standards. And actually they set a limit for those ceremonies because of how like Julius Irving's had gone for so long that they were like, okay, we need to set a time limit to make these not interesting. But it's interesting that after Kareem's was done, there really was not another one on a major scale, at least that I can find. And, you know, part of it is, you know, we talked about Jordan's retirement. Magic's, he had to retire because of HIV. So his was sudden. Bird didn't, you know, his last year, he wasn't, I think his decision didn't come until after the Olympics, you know, his announcement, at least his final decision, I think came before then, but wasn't necessarily assured during the season. And he wasn't maybe necessarily the type to have that kind of pomp and circumstance. So you wouldn't think Kareem would be either. The Kareem's sort of the interesting one because you think that sort of goes against his personality to a degree, but just the way it goes. So, but it is kind of interesting that we've never I don't think you found one either where we found one where it was like, oh yeah, this guy is definitely going out this season and it's gonna be a big deal.
Yeah, no, there's not really any. I mean, there's a guy we're gonna talk about here in a little bit that's probably comes the closest, but even then it wasn't it's still very, yeah, it wasn't. I mean, you look at the stars of the 90s and I guess we'll talk about him when we talk about, you know, this guy, but yeah, it's really hard to find until I'm this might be the I'm trying to think if there's anybody that strikes me. Maybe
Reggie Miller, he announced his announcement came before the end of the season. But I think that was more just a big deal in Indiana and not necessarily a big deal about, with nationally. Because, I mean, that was the same season the Malice of the Palace Brawl. So
yeah, that was a good team. I mean, they probably had bigger focuses. I mean, that team was built go to the finals. Yeah. I mean, that was a good team at that time. Right. Everybody was ready to go. Like that was the main focus I remember of that year, is that Reggie was going to retire and everybody was like, all right, cool. Instead, like, let's win this for, you know, let's get to the finals for Reggie, or let's win a title for it, versus like the, oh, let's give Reggie things. You know, that was a real deal team at that point.
Yeah. I mean, but after the Mouse in the Palace, that wasn't going to happen. But before then, yes, that absolutely was sort of the case. So that was just kind of a weird year, a weird vibe around that team.
And Ewing, of course, is a famous one that just retired, you know, got a Supersonic or a Magic.
His came after for the season, so
and then even then it was just kind of like a real sad at that point. Yeah. So even then it would have been like kind of weird to like even do it, but yeah, you go through the bunch. And Hakeem, we'll talk about him in here bit, you know.
Yeah, there isn't really much to say. I mean, other than he just basically played his final season with the Raptors after, you know, 17 years in Houston, and then, you know, was
all the 90s guys seemed to at least bounce like one more time before they were all the way
the guys who you would think might get that sort of circumstance didn't really get it because they were ended up being on different teams. Or
if Hakeem was in Houston, I don't have any doubt that there would have been something. Yeah. But you know,
I mean, they had a ceremony in Houston after, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the same kind of thing, you know. So so next, now this is sort of a different category, but I just thought it was too interesting to not mention. Is this is Jerry West, and he retired in after the 74 season, and there wasn't any kind of a farewell tour, but the basically just announced it I guess actually in fall of 74, so before the 75 season he announced it. You know, this came after a pretty bad year for him. He did not play well that year.
And that final year, you know, he just played in just 31 games, so didn't play a lot of games. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Scoring wise, not terrible. 20.3 points per game, 6.6 assists per game, which are pretty low for him, but not too bad. Career worst 3.2 win shares, and his second worst ever win shares per 48 of 0.159. Yeah. So not a terrible win share for 48 number, strong. But it's not bad. But yeah, overall though, it just wasn't the Jerry West of old in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And you know, health wise. And just numerous ways as well, but it's probably the worst one we've talked about yet in terms of seasons, but still interesting.
Yeah, and the two most interesting things about this is that West was like the Lakers had three all-time greats retire in three straight seasons. I mean, Elgin Baylor retired during the 72 season before they won the championship. You know, he played like 11 games that year and was just done. And then Wilt retired after the 73 season, and then West retired after the 74 season. So that's just like it's sort of an incredible thing if you think about it. I mean, those are basically three of the top five greats of their, you know, of that generation, and they all retire on the same team within, you know, a very short period of time.
Right.
And then West, he was eventually sued by the team for not fulfilling his contract. It was a $6 million lawsuit. Actually, I guess he had sued Jack Kent Cook, the owner, after they wouldn't honor the contract, and they said that, well, he retired, so, you know, we shouldn't honor the contract, feeling like he could have played, and, you know, he said, no, I couldn't play or whatever. So anyway, he withdraws the lawsuit, and part of the terms of that are that he became the coach of the team.
That's very so weird, the forced coach. That's just
yes. And you know, he replaced Bill Sharman, who went into the front office and was an important aspect of, you know, front office in building the next great Lakers team. That was right when that was 76 season. That was right around the time that they got Kareem. I think Kareem was the only, if I'm not mistaken, West was Kareem's first coach, or if not, it was close after that. So, and the Lakers kind of coaching was not necessarily West's forte. They sort of, you know, it was basically a give the ball to Kareem and let him work kind of thing, which, I mean,
that's not a bad strategy.
No, yeah, but right? I mean, the lack of variety was kind of an issue. And he just didn't have the temperament for coaching. I mean, he admitted this kind of in his book, that he wasn't necessarily like the guy who was, you know, meant to do that. But I just thought that was like, that's such a 70s NBA story, that, you know, basically the, to end a lawsuit, he becomes coach of the team. So
it's like a movie. There's got to be like some campy, you know, 80s or 90s movie where, you know, somebody has to become the coach of a team or whatever.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's perfect. Maybe they should make the adaptation of the Jerry West story.
I like his quote of like, I wouldn't be here unless my suit had been dropped. Said and I don't know. This is funny. It's a UPI story, and this is like the most boring quote ever. I spoke to Mr. Cook yesterday morning. He said he would call me back in the afternoon. He called me back in the afternoon and congratulated me. So it was finalized yesterday.
Jeez, thrilling.
Yes, I had to pad that one, I guess.
And then I filled out paperwork, and then it was official.
Yes, there you go.
Cool. Tell us more.
Again, no, like, this is a different category, but I just thought was sort of interesting. And then one more that also doesn't really fit, but I just thought was interesting because of kind of the contrast on how they were, on how they both went out with their links together, John Stockton and Karl Malone. Stockton retired in 2003. And then Malone went to the Lakers to chase after a championship. And he was injured toward the end of that, or he was injured in the regular season, and then was injured again in the playoffs and didn't get that championship for him. Ended up that being his final season. Although I remember in 2005, there was like some talk that he might like come back and join the Spurs, but that obviously never happened. But, you know, interesting that neither guy ever got that true send off.
Neither of them did. And this one in particular, there's a YouTube video showing the final minutes of this game. You know, it was the Jazz losing a playoff series to the Kings. And the announcers kind of very heavily say, you know, this might be it for Stockton. And, you know, all the players on the Kings sort of go over there and kind of say hi and, you know, give handshakes to him. And the camera's fixated on Stockton the entire time. But it's never really explicit. And then after, you know, they have the post-game press conference and, you know, the reporter, the first question out of the gates is, you know, is this it? Are you retiring? And he goes, you know, I don't know. You know, in perfect, if you ever heard Stockton do an interview, he's like, maybe, I don't know. I haven't thought of it or whatever. And then like, you know, in this particular YouTube video, then there's like a news broadcast that's like the next day, you know, when he finally gets into Utah or whatever. And his quote in perfect Stocktonian fashion is, I think I'm finished. Like in that tone too, they're like, all right, John, like, what did you have to say? Because he calls this like not a press conference, but it's like in the locker room, and yeah, he just says, I think I'm finished. So he says that he informed everybody on the team plane and all that sort of stuff, and that, you know, that was going to be it for him. So yeah, like it really wasn't a very good send off. You know, watching that video, it's just like, man, that's the end of John Stockton. Like the season wise, I mean, and he even admits in the post game press conference too that, you know, I wasn't happy with how I played this year. I wasn't a good contributor to the team. He wasn't too bad. I mean, 10.8 points per game was fairly low for him, but 7.7 assists per game, still pretty good. 48% shooting, you know, not bad at all. 9 win shares, like really damn good. And then a 0.91 win shares per 48, which are like for a 40-year-old, they're like shockingly good. So, you know, other than his scoring kind of and probably a lot of his athleticism, he was still, you know, Stockton was still a decent player. But yeah, you can sort of tell from that postgame press conference in that game that it was probably going to be it for him. And then, you know, of course, does it. But yeah, he didn't really get a great send off, and neither did Malone. And probably the most tragic part of that is they didn't really do it in Utah. They didn't get, you know, a real good send off from them. They mentioned in one article that, you know, Stockton almost immediately after got like they named a street after him outside the Delta Center. The next year they went and retired, you know, his number or whatever. But it's still, it just didn't feel like a send off worthy of a guy who, you know, played his entire career in Utah and that sort of stuff. But knowing John Stockton, that's probably about what he would have wanted anyway.
Yeah,
he would have been the most awkward guy ever to like, here's like a cigar. And he'd be like, you know, he'd be like shivering while it's happening. Like, just let me play. I just want to play basketball. Like, so I get it. It's fine for him. And I'm sure this is the exact way he wanted to go out, and I don't blame him.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's interesting, because Malone and Stockton obviously, like, you know, were together for 18 years, had, you know, basically a whole generation of fans, you know, knew success through them, and they were the most important, I mean, they still are the most important players in that franchise's history by far. basically established it after it had been a joke of a franchise for a decade. Just really laid that foundation. So for them to kind of not get that was a little disappointing, and maybe contributes a little bit to why I think Stockton and Malone maybe aren't like quite as appreciated as they should be. Especially Malone, who like is really like has a case, and I don't think he is, but I think he certainly has a case of being the greatest power forward ever. And certainly was that when he retired, and you know, with Duncan coming right after him, and with, you know, Malone and Sasha never getting past Jordan and all that stuff sort of works against them. But they were very close to a championship or multiple championships. You know, they had this incredible longevity and they were great. I don't think any tandem of players has been as great together longer and later in their career. I mean, you know, even like
it's astonishing how long that they were together and how successful they were. You know, we have a future show coming up where we're going to talk about, you know, the number two team in the 90s, and in doing that I did a lot of research on Utah, and it's like you sort of think, oh yeah, you know, they you know, in the late 90s they popped up and faced the Bulls. I mean, that team was damn good for you know, a decade plus, right, with those two guys as pretty much the only, like, there were some parts in and here, you know, in there and out there, whatever, but I mean, it's those two dudes. I mean, that's it. I mean, that is really, there's not another star that popped up, you know, on those Utah teams, you know, very much. I mean, there's little guys here and there, but yeah, that's those two guys that basically every single year that team was going to win 55 games, almost guaranteed, at least 50 every single year for, you know, 15, you know, a decade plus or whatever. And that's profound. I mean, it's important.
Yes. Yeah. There were a couple others that we just, you know, were a very, very quick mention. We talked about him a little bit before, but Alvin Hayes, he reached the 5,000 minutes milestone for a tanking Rockets team, and then that was it for him. Hal Greer for the 76ers, he was the lone holdout from the 1967 title team, you know, one of the greatest individual single seasons of all time with Wilt. Ended his career on the bench on a 9-win team. There's a story from Perfectly Awful, which is the book Charlie Rosen wrote on that team, and basically like Al Greer, like, you know, wasn't playing in there, and then the coach is like, hey, you want to get into this game? He's like, you know, like yeah, no, like, I'm not in shape, like, you know, it's not gonna happen. So like, and like the fans were like, you know, in there, like, you know, kind of like begging for him to like want to, you know, just have him go in one time and, you know, in be this guy who's, you know, this legend for this team and is like this last link to this great team. And of course, the 9-win Sixers are like the worst team ever. And it's just like, just a sad coda to, you know, a tremendously terrible season. And then Jason Kidd, who retired from the Knicks after failing to make a basket, I believe, in his last 10 games. And
God, that was bad.
Yeah, I think he was 0 for 20 or something like that. And then then he immediately became coach of the Nets, and then it was like this like great like home, you know, this homecoming story, and the Nets were going to be really good. They'd gotten Garnett and Pierce, and they were going to team up, you know, with Deron Williams, and it, you know, there was a lot of optimism there about them, you know, being a title contender and all that. And, you know, his number was retired right away. And it was like, you know, this big, you know, looks like all these pieces were going to come together. And then they were terrible to start. They ended up being better, but ended up, you know, being disappointing in that season. And then they had a terrible, ugly breakup over that next summer. And now it's not so much the, I guess, the final season as it is the aftermath of that. But that's just, you know, interesting the way that worked out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then Hakeem Olajuwon is another one we talked about a little bit. But yeah, of course, you know, played the final season with the Raptors after so many years in Houston. And yeah, just it wasn't the same thing. And I imagine it would have been a lot different if he stuck with Houston the whole way through. But, you know, to be fair, though, that team was good. That Toronto Raptors team. So that was a little bit of one of the interesting parts, is that he was sort of chasing, you know, an NBA Finals berth or something like that. But yeah, it didn't end up happening.
Yeah. That announcement came like during training camp the next year. So, and then he went to Houston and they had the announcement, and then that's, you know, but it's still, again, not as much of the saying goodbye part, you know, was.
Yeah. He's absolutely a guy that I think probably could have and should have deserved it had he stayed in Houston the entire time, or at least had he announced it, you know, ahead of time. I think he was, because I think that's another guy, at least in Houston, was a transcendent sort of guy for that franchise. But
yeah,
you know, wasn't to
be. They won back-to-back championships. Yeah, I mean, it absolutely was really important. So, but you know, we don't all get like I said, it's very rare for the actual farewell tour to come about. So so Kobe, you know, you're blessed. It'll be
have fun. And,
yeah, exactly. It'll be interesting to see if. And he, I mean, I can't imagine Duncan really having one. Dirk, maybe I could see that.
Dirk's going to have one.
I feel like the Mavericks are the type of franchise that's going to try to make a big deal about that. So, so I could see that one standing out and him kind of getting that, you know, that last hurrah kind of thing.
And he seems like a guy who kind of yuck it up a little bit too,
yeah,
and enjoy it. I mean, people sort of think he's a very stoic guy, but he's a fun loving dude.
Oh, yeah.
He'll love it. He really will have a lot of fun with that. So.
Yeah, that'll be fun when that comes. So, all right. Well, thanks everyone for checking us out. You can find us at HarvardParoxysm.com, and we are part of the HP Basketball Network. You can find our podcast on iTunes. Either search for Over and Back for our individual feed, or search for Harvard Paroxysm Network for the group of podcasts. Please leave a rating and or review. That'd be a wonderful way to let people know about us and to spread the word about our podcast if you're into it. Also, you can check out our forums over in backnba.com. It's a good discussion of NBA history there. And you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. So until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll be back again soon.